Welcome to Bite Size History, the show where we look at people or moments from history in 15 minutes or less. This is born from my passion for history, but also working with little people with a short attention span. Once you've listened to the episode, please subscribe on whatever platform you're using. Also, check out daily content on my Facebook or Twitter at History Bite Size. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Once upon a time, women were not respected for their intellect. Their purpose was to get married and have babies. Every now and then, someone would break away from this and do their own thing. Rarely was this received with excitement by the world. For you see, in those days, men had fragile egos and feared being outdone by a woman. Along came a female so intelligent that she could not help but be noticed. She was so innovative that the technology did not exist for the theories and designs she developed. Of course, there were those that tried to stifle her creativity or take credit for it. Yet over time, her true genius was fully understood. In 1979, a computer programming language was named after her. For years, it was the standard for the U.S. Department of Defense, NATO, and many others. This includes air traffic control, avionics, railways, space technology, and banking. From payroll to missile control, the Ada computer language is used because it is so secure and accurate. Today, we're going to learn about the life and work of Ada Lovelace. But first, let me tell you about my distributor. Ada Lovelace was born December 10th, 1815, the only marital daughter of Lord Byron. Byron was a bit of a traveling partier and had at least two more children. His escapades with women and men were well known. This resulted in him having gonorrhea and syphilis by the time he was 21. But he was such a celebrity, he could get away with anything. While at Cambridge, he was told that pet dogs were not allowed. So he bought a tame bear and walked it all over campus on a chain. Later in life, he built a zoo for himself. Lord B's establishment consists of 10 horses, 8 enormous dogs, 3 monkeys, 5 cats, an eagle, a crow, and a falcon. Just met on the grand staircase, 5 peacocks, 2 guinea hens, and an Egyptian crane. He was also obsessed with death. He liked turning skulls into mugs. When his good friend Percy Shelley died, he asked if he could have his skull. He's a good friend there. Despite all of his oddities, he's still considered one of the greatest English poets. One of his most well-known works, Don Juan, portrays the main character as a man who is easily seduced by women, not as a womanizer. Maybe he was trying to make excuses for his own actions. Now, Ada's mother was Annabel Noel Byron, the 11th Baroness of Wentworth. She had a whole bunch of other titles as well. While Lord Byron lived the crazy life of an artistic celebrity, Lady Byron lived by a strict moral code. She was highly intelligent and trained in mathematics. As a young child, Annabel's parents recognized her natural skill and hired a tutor from Cambridge University. In the early 1800s, this was very unique for a woman to get this kind of education. This was right around when the Industrial Revolution was picking up. Much of the British population were moving from a farming society to cities to work in factories. Education was limited to only the elite, while the rest of the population struggled to survive in squalid, dangerous conditions. As Annabel got older, she used her status to try to help the common citizen. When Lord Byron married Annabel, everyone thought it was a strange pairing. Here was a man who cared only for himself and pursued pleasure, whereas Lady Byron was very strict and analytically minded. Lady Byron told her mother that she planned to save Lord Byron from his bad behavior. She was not successful, and in fact was pretty certain that he had an affair with his half-sister. 5 weeks after Ada was born, the couple separated. Lord Byron said he needed to leave the country to improve his financial situation, also known as running away from debtors. Lady Byron was fine with this because she was pretty certain he was going insane. She'd even documented his behavior, suggesting that he had some kind of brain tumor. They never saw each other again. Lady Byron devoted herself to making sure her daughter would not turn out like Lord Byron. She had her tutored from a very early age. Anytime Ada started to like a tutor too much, the tutor would be replaced. Lady Byron felt that if someone liked their teacher, then the teacher was not being strict enough. I have that problem. She also made Ada lay in her bed perfectly still for hours to teach her self-control. Lady Byron attempted to erase all influence of her husband by covering up the family portrait and forbidding Ada to read poetry. Other than the tutors, Ada spent most of her time with her grandmother. She never really connected with her mom, and her mother did not care to connect with her. In fact, Lady Byron once wrote a letter to the grandmother stating, "I talk to it for your satisfaction, not my own, and shall be very glad when you have it under your own." She referred to her own daughter as it. Ada certainly benefited from her education, but the creativity was not drilled out of her like her mother wanted. When Ada was 12, she studied a dead bird she found. She decided she wanted to fly and started researching flight. She created a book full of drawings called Flyology. She seemed to have a good scientific grasp of what was needed. Of course, she also had the mind of a 12-year-old. She told her mother, "I've got a scheme to make a thing in the form of a horse with a steam engine in the inside so contrived as to move an immense pair of wings fixed on the outside of the horse in such a manner as to carry it up into the air while a person sits on its back." I'm pretty sure if Ada had successfully invented a Pegasus, she would have been the life of the party. Unfortunately, her mom's response was to make her stop working on the project and focus on her other studies. Shortly afterwards, Ada got terribly sick and was bedridden for nearly 3 years. A few years after that, she was taken to the court of nobles, as was custom. She's got to find a husband. Even at the young age of 17, everyone was fascinated by her. One man, Charles Babbage, could not believe how intelligent she was. He had been working on developing a machine that could tabulate polynomial functions. This would be used to create charts for navigation, engineering, and other scientific endeavors. Before that, all math had to be figured out by putting pen to paper and hoping that the person computing the problem got their math correct. Charles Babbage's idea was called the difference engine, and it was basically a giant calculator. When Babbage showed a model of his idea at a party, everyone thought it was a little odd, but Ada was immediately fascinated by it. She understood the concept of it and was swept away by its implications. Babbage later called her the Enchantress of Numbers. Ada felt that used in the correct way, the machine could do so much more than crunch numbers. Babbage never completed his difference engine, but he and Ada began to work together on new concepts. In 1835, Ada married a baron. They had 3 children together. Unfortunately, much like her father, it seems that Ada had a number of affairs. Her husband initially seemed okay with it, but towards the end of their life, he definitely checked out, and he destroyed any letters that she had written to her. He never publicly said anything about this. Meanwhile, Ada continued her mathematical and scientific endeavors, pawning her kids off to a tutor. She and Babbage worked to develop a machine called an analytical engine. She believed that this machine would be able to do many things beyond numbers. She envisioned the machine being able to do increasingly more mathematical problems, as well as being programmed to draw, write, play music, or any number of other things. Ada also tried developing a mathematical model for how the brain works, but she never figured it out. Despite Ada Lovelace's extensive work, the analytical engine was never completed. She and Babbage had creative differences, as well as they were not able to secure funding. Ada's health began to fail because of uterine cancer, and she died at the age of 36 before seeing any of her projects completed. And then they were swept away like they never existed. Charles Babbage came to be known as the father of computers, even though he never figured out how to make the analytical engine work. According to historians who have studied both Lovelace and Babbage, they believe that Lovelace used Babbage's initial concept and was able to take it much further than he could have. Given the right circumstances, she may have been able to develop the machine. But upon her death, there was no one to stick up for Ada, so Charles took the credit. More than 100 years later, the great computer scientist Alan Turing studied her work and believed that she might have been on the verge of developing artificial intelligence. It was only because of his discovery of her notes that the name Ada Lovelace reappeared. Sadly, the story of women's contributions being erased from history is not uncommon. Charles Babbage was certainly very intelligent, and he deserves recognition for his work, but that doesn't need to be at the expense of Lovelace's contributions. To honor her work as the first computer programmer, the U.S. Department of Defense named a programming language after her. As mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this language is used in so many things, including your cell phones. What if Ada and Charles had finished the analytical engine? That would have meant computers existing a century before they did. What other advancements might she have been able to make? Imagine if something like Google existed in the early 1900s. Ada Lovelace truly was an astounding woman, particularly in a time when women were not respected for their intellect. It's important that her story and many others like it be told. The stories of those that have historically been marginalized, they need to be told so that we can see the vast impact that they have had on our life and can continue to have. Now, listeners, thank you for joining me in this new podcast adventure. Please like and subscribe to Bite Size History on whatever platform you're using. Share it with your friends and family. Let this grow. And I'd love some feedback from you guys. You can reach out to me on my Facebook page or on Twitter at History Bite Size. It's at History Bite Size. Until next time, keep pursuing knowledge.